good deal. All right, so what I'm going to tell you about today is some of the work that we're doing to try to get a better handle on this crop weed signaling by using a model plant called Arabidopsis. Many of you probably are familiar with it, to test some of our hypotheses about how plants signal each other and you get that reduction in yield. All right, so thanks to Dr. Swan's talk there, we know that, of course, weeds cause a reduced yield in crops, but it doesn't seem because they are reducing the light, nutrients, or water. And although some plants almost certainly have a phytotoxic effect, not all plants do, and yet pretty much all plants show this response, right? And if it's not about the competition, but rather about the signaling that allows that crop plant to see that weed and then alter its physiology and growth patterns because of that, that opens up some really interesting and potentially useful ideas, right? Because if we can understand that signaling process and block it, then perhaps then we can make crops that are essentially blind to weeds. Now, in a natural environment, that would probably be a pretty bad thing for a plant to be blind to its neighbors. But in a high-input agricultural setting, where we're giving the plants all the water and nutrients that they need, making them blind to those weeds could be really pretty advantageous. For one thing, we might be able to have less need for less herbicides, right? We can have more flexibility in the timing when we treat our plants with the herbicides, right? So I'm sure no farmer's going to let his field go weedy, even if he could, just because it would look bad. But if we can make the plants blind to weeds, we could greatly enhance the timing when we could hit those crops with the weeds, knocking them out later in the season when there might actually be some competition for resources that you see at the end of the year, right? In addition to that, it opens up some opportunities for dealing with herbicide resistance weeds, right? So we could use more cover crops or maybe even use cash cover crops or intercropping technology now, because we're not going to get that simultaneous yield hit to both our cover crop and our co-cropped plants with it, right? So we can increase biomass and we can give the growers more dependable yields, right? So that's sort of our hope, is that we can identify these signals and knock them out, right? So one of the approaches that our group did, myself and Dr. Sharon Clay at South Dakota State University, we looked at the soybean response to weeds at a transcriptomics level. So we grew plants for a couple years with or without weeds, collected the RNA from at least three independent isolates from each, did a big transcriptomic study, and looked for the genes that were differentially expressed consistently in response to those weeds. And we didn't see very many of them, surprisingly enough. When we looked at the ones that were consistent between years, we see a whole bunch of heat shock genes that were being repressed, which is sort of odd, sort of surprising. We're not really quite sure what's going on there with that, but we've got some ideas. And we only saw about 14 genes that were upregulated. But one of those genes really caught our attention, and that was this phytochrome interacting three-factor gene. And the reason that caught our attention so strongly was because we knew from a lot of work in Arabidopsis that phytochrome response, or these phytochrome interacting factors, are, or at least a subclass of the phytochrome interacting factors, are really important in the shade avoidance response. So basically what happens is the plant gets the far red light. That changes the state of the phytochrome. Phytochrome moves into the nucleus, where it can now bind to this phytochrome interacting factor 4 gene. That stabilizes that protein, so it's no longer being degraded, and it allows it to go ahead and bind to a number of genes, altering their expression. And many of the genes that its expression that it targets are ones that are involved in gibberellic acid responses. Now, GA, gibberellic acid, is a phytohormone that causes many of the responses that you see in a shade avoidance response, right? Causes plants to grow elongated, produce more longer and skinnier shoots, causes them to flower earlier, and all of those things are going to also reduce yield, right? So if you have taller, skinnier plants that flower earlier, you're going to have less leaf matter there for generating yield potential at the end, less biomass, and the fact that they're thinner and skinnier makes them more likely to fall over as well, so you can get lodging effects, right? So we were really excited about this. So here we had a gene that looked like it was going to be playing a significant role in the response, and the nice thing about it is we know that it was sort of a member of a gene family. There are quite a number of phytochrome interacting factor genes in soybeans, but only these two, this particular one and it's a very close relative of it, were the only ones that were upregulated in response to weeds. We thought, well, hey, maybe we've got a situation here where we can just knock out this one gene or these two genes and make the plants blind to weeds. And we were working on that, and it's not a trivial matter to knock out a gene in soybeans. CRISPR technology wasn't available when we first started this for soybeans. It's not available now, so we've got some plans to do that. But we're working on making some RNAi constructs, and they were a little problematic. And at the time, I was lamenting this fact to a group of graduate students and postdocs at South Dakota State University. And this guy here, Carl Fellbaum, a very bright postdoc, said, well, doing this in soybeans sort of sucks. Why don't you just do it in Arabidopsis? And I went, yeah, I should have thought of that. I'm actually originally an Arabidopsis person from my graduate work. And yeah, they already had the mutants. They were already available. We already had them. They were used actually to study the shade avoidance response system, right? So I ordered them from the, first thing I did was ordered them from the mutation library that they have in Arabidopsis. But I thought, you know, I better make sure that Arabidopsis acts kind of like crop plants in their ability to respond to weeds, right? Because a lot of the shade avoidance response really actually wasn't done with Arabidopsis growing next to other plants. It was Arabidopsis growing in a growth chamber with different filters of red infrared light. So I wanted to see whether or not Arabidopsis exhibited a classic critical weed-free period. So what I did was I had Arabidopsis plants growing in flats. I had 10 flats growing either where half the flats were planted immediately with weed seeds. These are perennial ryegrass, a mix of perennial and annual ryegrass that I was using as my weed. And then every week I would take a flat of plants and I'd take the weeds out of one flat and transplant them into the other flat. So I was able to maintain the same sort of developmental stage of my weeds throughout this process for looking at the critical weed-free period. And I looked to see what the growth responses were. And sure enough, just like most crops, Arabidopsis does have a critical weed-free period. Looks like it's somewhere between probably 1.5 weeks to 4 week stage of growth. And this is just one experiment. This was repeated twice. Very, very similar growth curves. So that was pretty nice to know that Arabidopsis looked like it might be a good system to study this. So I was ready to check out the response of our phytochrome interacting factor 4 and 5 mutants. There are two genes actually that are pretty strongly involved in the shade avoidance response in Arabidopsis. So they have mutants that both 4 and 5 were knocked out. And I grew them either in a weed-free condition, and here you have the wild-type plants, and here you have our PIF4 mutants, and there was really no significant difference in morphology under these weed-free conditions. And I was really hoping I would see a big difference between the mutants and our wild-type under weedy conditions. But sadly, I did not. Whoops, I went too far here. Sadly, I did not. So looking at just fresh weight, here's my wild type, pretty good strong reduction in fresh weight when they're growing with the weeds relative to when they're not. Look at my phytochrome mutants, and not really any difference from the wild type. Same response with branch number, which is another classic phenotype or response to the shade avoidance. So this made me wonder, right? So maybe, first it was disappointing, because that meant that just knocking out this phytochrome interacting factor probably wasn't going to give us weed-tolerant Arabidopsis. So I thought, well, maybe there's some hope. Maybe it's not so much that we've got that signal is involved, but maybe there's some other things. Maybe the perennial ryegrass is producing a final alexic response, and that's the reason that we still see this strong knockdown in yield. So I did an experiment where I separated the Arabidopsis plants at the root level from my grass seeds by growing them in troughs of horticultural cloth, which provides a barrier, but a permeable barrier. And then to check for phytoalexins, I sort of lined that permeable barrier, saturated it with activated charcoal, hoping that then I would see a difference in response. And also there's the other possibility that I was just getting too much shading. And so I also grew plants where I had the Arabidopsis plants growing in two rows with the grass plants just growing on the outside, bright light on top, and oriented south in the greenhouse, so I was unlikely to get significant shading by the grass plants. But still, I still see a huge reduction in yield with my weedy plants relative to my control plants. So knocking out the Spidachrome resistance gene probably doesn't do it. And now, because of Clarence's work, we probably have an idea why. And that is because, although the Spidachrome probably plays a role in very early stages of growth and development, it probably doesn't play a role, a strong enough role, in that growth reduction that we see with weeds. That's probably more likely to be due to that oxidative stress response, and not the Spidachrome response. So a lot of things that was learned about that or suspected to be the case from the Arabidopsis studies turns out probably not to be the case. So, but we do have a great system now for testing stuff, right? So we've got Arabidopsis. Arabidopsis is a great system. Some of the things we want to do next is we want to look at other likely targets for responses, some genes involved in oxidative stress responses that we can look at. Also sort of curious about the signal. Is it a rheostat or a switch? So will we get a nice smooth curve like we saw with the density for weed studies in corn and soybeans, or will we get sort of a sigmoidal curve that would be more indicative of a switch response? Well, we also, of course, want to test with different weeds. We're using perennial ryegrass. We'd like to try some broadleaves. And looking at gene expression and also doing some GWAS studies because Arabidopsis is pretty useful for doing that sort of thing. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge some of the people I work with at SDSU. We've got Sharon and David Clay, who were very instrumental in doing some of the original work with soybean. Stephanie Brueggemann, who is right here and is going to give the last talk of today, for doing all the technical work. Folks at USDA ARS in Stoneville, Mississippi, Brian Scheffler for helping me sequence some of my libraries for the soybeans, and of course my technicians at USDA in Fargo, Laura Kelly and Cheryl Huckle, who runs the greenhouse, and the guys at the iPlant Collaborative who helped me with some of the data analysis. So that, I'll take some questions if I have any time. How much time do I have there? Done? All right. I'll take one question if anyone's got one, a burning question. If not, we'll go on to Dr. Lee. All right. So, thanks.